Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Women Leading the Way Radio Show, where each time you'll hear from successful women CEOs, executives, and professionals, where we'll discover how they do what they do to be successful in business. We'll be interviewing women who have overcome big challenges, women who have incredible stories of lessons learned in dealing with adversity. We'll even interview women who have started and grown successful organizations and women who are C-level executives with unique talents and positions. Our goal is to bring successful businesswomen together to share how they're leading the way in business today.
Hey, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Women Lead Radio. I'm Michelle Berquist, your host of Women Who Lead, and with me today, I am delighted to say that our leading lady, I'm going to introduce her, is Julie Jakopik, and she is the founder and CEO of iLead Strategies. And just a little bit you should know about Julie is she's the creator of Don't Await It, Create It framework. She is a Kick Fanny columnist. I can't wait to ask you about that, Julie, and co-author of Women Power Strategies for Female Leaders. Julie helps leaders clarify their vision and develop the strategies and relationship to bring that vision to reality. And so our topic today is you are a born leader, don't await it, create it. So welcome, Julie, and say hello to all of our listeners on Women Lead Radio.
Thanks so much, Michelle, for having me. This is really, it's really fun to share the message and to get to know your audience of amazing women.
Well, I appreciate you being on here. And what I have to totally disclose to our listeners, I feel like we're bi-coastal today because you are in Washington, D.C. I'm in California. So here we are, and we have national listeners. So we're covering all the bases. And I know you have a lot of things to share about leadership. So I'm, first of all, dying to know what Don't Await It, Create It, or the framework really means. Can you kind of share with our listeners a little bit about what does that mean, Don't Await It, Create It?
Well, the impetus for Don't Await It, Create It is sort of from two directions. I designed a very sexy planning tool for nonprofit organizations called Planning for Results. Not sexy at all. And we were able to pull teams together to teach them that framework. When we didn't have the grant anymore, what I had learned from all of that work was that the magic wasn't in the plan. It was in the questions we asked people to ask to create the plan. And if I could teach people a way to plan anything, they could take it for their organization, they could take it for their retirement, they could plan a vacation, they could run a marathon. It's a way of approaching a planning process. And so that was sort of the beginning of a personal thing.
Well, and you, I mean, I know we've had conversations. You talk a lot about clarity, right? I mean, to me, it's like, you know, you need to know what you're trying to go for, but what do you suggest female leaders do as it relates to clarity and leadership?
Well, part of the reason, and the reason for the label Don't Await It, Create It, is I basically grew up, my father died when I was about 14, and I grew up very conscious of the fact that you get one life and it can change in an instant. So this business we all have of I'll do it next year, I'll do it when the kids are grown, I'll do it after I get married, I'll do it after I buy my house, I'll do it after the next promotion stuff, means we don't get things done. And if we use it, we don't. So that's sort of the Don't Await It, Create It label. And I think the key to that is being really clear and, frankly, honest about what you actually want. One of the exercises I have people do two big exercises at the beginning of the framework. One is, what's the legacy? Why are you here?
Right.
And lots of good questions about, you know, what do you want your grandchildren's grandchildren to say about you? What did you want to do when you were five that you gave up? You know?
These are great questions. And, I mean, I kind of like, you know, when you said you start with clarity and the piece you just mentioned was I think of that book, Start With Why. I mean, what's our purpose and our reason for, you know, why we're here? That is just such a powerful thing to start with, because then that – kind of start to, if I'm hearing you, on the path to figuring out where you want to go. Is that right?
Yeah, because then your metric for am I going to do something or not is, does it move me there or not?
Well, and I'm curious, for you, what's kind of your story and how you came up with the kind of Donna Waitt created? I mean, is this from personal experience, or give us a little rundown of how this came about? Because I think it's fascinating.
There's a couple ways to answer it. The original planning tool was, I was working in a network of national nonprofits. There were some folks who were doing this work that they called Move the Mountain. And they were doing these big, complicated, multi-year efforts to change organizations. And when we looked at who was doing it, they're all the predictable folks. They're all the people who would be thinking strategically and along those lines to begin with. And I was challenged by a client to come up with, what could we do in 4 board meetings? You know, what can somebody who's in the middle of this group, who's probably never going to make a $200,000 3-year investment, what can we do for them to shift how they're doing their work? So the original idea was, we jokingly at one point referred to it as Julie in a Box. It was the strangest writing process I've ever had. I walked around my living room as if I had an audience, and then I would go write things down, and then I would go present to the empty chairs and go write that down. But it really was, let's start from clarity about what you want and how you'll recognize when you get there, and then figure out how. Because what happens all too often in the organizational space is 2 things. Either what's next, and we don't look about whether we want to stay on that path anymore or not, or here's how much we have in the budget. What can we do with it? Not where do we want to go, and how can we get the budget to get there? And so that was sort of the underpinning. The label, unfortunately came from another experience in my life where someone died suddenly, and I was like, God damn it, we don't get to wait. Later is not ever here. We get to go do this. And so the framework for the framework really came out of, how do we help people move forward where they have enough vision to sustain them on the days that are hard and stuck, but also concrete, actionable things they can do. So when we do the conference, for example, all of my participants write a congratulatory note to themselves for the first 30 days of progress. I mail them those postcards 30 days later. And so they'll get a postcard that says, dear me, congratulations on blah, blah, blah.
That's cool.
And they know it's coming. Yeah. So that was kind of
I love it. And with the work that you do, and we're going to get into a little bit more about your background in the limited time we have, but, you know, can you kind of share a success story with the client? I mean, I know top secret information with who the clients are, but can you share a story of how, you know, a woman kind of, you know, she made it happen through your process and kind of the end result that our listeners might kind of go, ooh, I love that story.
So I've had a lot of different examples, and while I've got some that are stellar, the truth is people have made big changes in their lives in ways that are much more day-to-day. So I can think of a 70-year-old woman who had never learned to swim, who made a commitment to learn to swim. At the other end of the spectrum, Melinda Parrish is a Navy vet, went to the Naval Academy, was working in a defense contracting firm. She was injured, so she was no longer in the military, who said she wanted to be more creative, and she is now supporting herself as a plus-size model with an incredible blog.
That's a complete change
for who she is and what she had. I can think of a couple of people who have decided to run for office or run organizations or go after promotions. We, as women, sometimes believe we have to have everything it says in the job description perfect before we ever shoot for a promotion. Us doing other people's work. Who gets the job is not our decision, but if we don't apply, it never is going to be us. So,
isn't that funny? But that is such a story because, you know, then there's stories of men. They're like, they'll read the job description and go, well, I qualify for about 30% of it, and they'll apply anyway. You know what I mean? So it's like we just – do you find, Julie, that women – I mean, this is what I hear among our association and also just kind of, you know, what the media portrays in articles. But do you think women just don't think big enough? Do they not go for their aspirations as much as they should? Or what kind of your take on how women aspire, you know, to the next level for themselves?
All right. So we could do about 3 hours on that one.
I know, I know. And that, well, as much
so
as you can answer.
Two things that I think might be useful to the audience. One of them is we didn't have a lot of role models 25 years ago, but we're starting to have them. And I think we actually need to go pay attention to who they are and what they're doing and what's happening with them. And in fact, they can be married and have children and do all kinds of things, despite what popular media would tell us, where I think there are Madam Secretary, I think, is the only current TV drama where we have a successful woman that also has children and a husband.
Mm, wow.
The media would tell us otherwise, but it is actually possible. And there are some role models now, number one. And the other one is we got to purge perfect.
We have to what?
To think that purge perfect.
Okay.
I do not actually have to be perfect at anything most of the time. Brain surgery has to be perfect. A peanut butter sandwich does not.
Oh, that's funny.
You know, I do a lot of proposal-based work. And, in fact, you and I were talking about a proposal right before we got on the phone. If I don't get the application in, it doesn't matter how well-written it is. This idea that we have to write Pulitzer Prize-winning prose every time we write an email gets in our way. And I think we tend to see ourselves as starting at 100 points and we can only lose points, as opposed to figuring out how many points we can get. And this business of having to be perfect all the time is nuts. We do it to ourselves. There's a bunch of good stories. Sheryl Sandberg tells a story about taking an exam with her roommate and her brother. And, of course, she and her roommate had been working really, really hard, and the brother showed up on the last night to study with them, and they go take the exam. And they walk out of the exam, and one of the women says, God, I screwed up my essay about the Hegelian dialectic. I don't even remember what that is. I do know I used to know. And Sandberg's like, yeah, I know. My answer to question four was really bad. And the brother, who had hardly studied, said I aced it.
How is that?
We're always looking for what's wrong. We're always looking for what's wrong. And I think it's about – we got to stop that. I just think it's not healthy.
And that
gets in our way.
Well, and you are in such a great place for women's issues and women's challenges and women's successes, right, with iLead strategies. But, you know, what do you feel are the real tipping points for so many women to get what they want, you know, in creating it and then getting what they want? Do you find that there is just, is it mostly the head part? Is it the action part? Is it the self-sabotage and overcoming that? Or is there not something that are kind of general principles that you see to kind of hold us back, you know, as women who want to go after what we want?
Another 3-hour question. Well, I live outside D.C., and D.C., if you haven't hung out here, is a town of heads. So if what they say about L.A. is people work hard and play hard, what they say here is we work hard and work hard. So there's some of the, like, living in our heads and I'll do it tomorrow stuff. I also think we like to be perfect and we wait till we're comfortable. And if you're doing something new, that's not going to happen. The number of it's like cleaning the house before the house cleaners come.
Oh my God, that's so funny. That is so true.
Right.
That is so many women
losing weight before losing weight before you go to the trainer. No.
Right. You know, I'm curious for our listeners, because I know you are just chock full of stuff, and I can tell every time I ask you a question, which are big questions, by the way. I'm not meaning to set you up. I apologize for that. But, you know, we'll have you back on this show. It's like you have so much to share. But, you know, for a lot of our listeners who are out there who are saying I'm stuck or I'm not loving what I'm, you know, doing right now in my professional world or my life, or, you know, my business isn't kind of performing as well as I'd like, what would be maybe 2 or 3 pieces of advice that you would give to our listeners that, you know, can kind of help them take action or, you know, kind of think a little differently, or my personal favorite, get different results, you know, get out of the muck? What would be your, you know, 3 New Year's type suggestions, because we're under New Year, so make it big. Come on, Julie, tell them.
Okay, let me think for a second here. So if I was being a real big jerk, I'd tell them
what
to
was
stop
that?
If I was being a big jerk,
stop
it. If you're miserable, that's a choice. And I don't mean that there aren't things going on around you that matter, but I think for a lot of women, we put everybody else first. And, you know, you can't pour from an empty cup. you can't. So
right.
It's miserable. We're, you know, like humans are the only people who sit on hot, only animal that would sit on a hot stove. You know, cat sits on a hot stove, it jumps off because it hurts. We sit there and go, well, it's going to cool down in a minute. Or maybe if I sat on it differently or like, no. Pain is information and we're not supposed
right.
to be in pain. So if you're in pain, something's got to change.
Mm-hmm.
And I do understand that people will choose certain misery over the misery of uncertainty, but we have to stop that too. So that's sort of the first one is, and so, you know, I guess it's acknowledge that it sucks and figure out what you don't like about it. One of the things I have folks I work with as coaching clients do that drives them crazy, particularly if they're women, is quickly sit down and make a list of 100 things you want.
Wow.
And on that
do they actually do that?
Under duress. And it will
take
a while.
You,
and the first time I did it.
They struggle with it, right? I can't imagine 100.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, 10 I get, but 100? Wow.
Well, if I give you 100, a couple things happen. You have room for world peace and fixing the ceiling in the bedroom, right? You can put it all down, number one. Number two, sometimes you don't get to what you really want until halfway through that list because it's got all the stuff you have to do, all the stuff other people want you to do or be or have, and it takes a while, I think, to actually unearth the parts of you that you really want. It also forces you to stop doing the way we edit because I bet you that you can do this and 10 wouldn't freak you out and you could do 10 in a minute if I don't let you edit. And the kinds of edits are, I don't deserve it, it isn't reasonable, no one will like me, right? If you can't do
right.
that to yourself and have to just make the list because really by the time you get to the bottom, you're like really liking indoor plumbing and air conditioning. It pushes you to actually be more honest with yourself, which I think is a very big deal. I think we have this, I don't know if it's Puritan work ethic thing or a strange interpretation of religion that we're supposed to sacrifice everything and have nothing left. I don't actually believe that. And I don't believe there's extra good human points at the end. You be the best person you can. And then we have
right.
the selfish problem.
That is, what's the selfish problem?
Taking care of me is selfish.
Oh, yes.
It sure is, because I'm no good to no one if I'm not okay. And that, I
you
think,
know,
is really hard.
It's so funny, because these principles are principles, and yet you're like, it's like you're describing every woman, you know? You've gotten into my head, right? And I'm, for our listeners, I mean, how did you get into this business? I mean, first of all, I know when you and I first met, I said, oh, my God, I love your business name, I Lead Strategies. I just think it's cool. I mean, it really says what it's all about. But can you share a little bit about how did you get into I Lead Strategies? I know you've got quite the background, which our listeners can look at your bio and things. But, you know, just hit some highlights of how did you get to this where this is what you do? What was the problem that you saw that was an opportunity for you to solve?
So this is actually a good story, and I'm really glad you asked it. And it has some of the flavor of I do all the same stuff to myself that everybody else does.
Oh,
so,
good to know. I thought you were going to say you were perfect.
Oh, hell no. when did Gore run? 2000. So in the election in 2000, 16 years ago, I worked my fanny off for Al Gore. I had permission from the organization I was leading to bank leave so that if he were to win, I could go help work on a transition team. I worked in a small nonprofit association. I managed to bank 8 weeks of leave, and he lost. And then I did it again. And so I served on John Kerry's Child Policy Council and did the whole thing a second time, and we didn't win again. And I sat in my apartment with a bottle, probably. Don't think I drank the whole bottle, but I drank more than a glass of white wine and decided that waiting for 300
million people. Hope it was a good bottle. It was a good bottle, I hope, right? A good one?
Yeah, it was. But, you know, after a certain point, I don't think I cared. And whined for a little bit. But trying to build a career based on 300 million people choosing some 60-year-old white guy was not a very good way to plan. Mm-hmm. And I had this idea that I wanted to call the company Envision It. Well, the problem with that is anything with the word it in it belongs to an IT company. And I ended up calling it Creating the Vision was my first name, which people thought was either advertising or sunglasses. No one understood what I did, and I couldn't tell you very well at that point. And quite typical of a woman, iLead is something I came up with for a client. I didn't come up with it for me. I came up with it for a client. God forbid I come up with it for me, right? We were building a leadership database of resources, and we were both listening to this guy give a speech, and he talked about leadership being about investing and inspiring. And every word he talked about began with the letter I. And I said, we should call this the I Lead resource guide and use these words as the labels for raising money and supervising people and, you know, the things we were actually looking at. And she rejected it.
Right.
And it stuck in my head. And I looked for things online and I couldn't find anything I really wanted. And I think I had iLead Solutions out there. There was a bunch of things I thought of, and I'm sitting in a meeting and I Googled iLead Strategies. It was available. I walked out of the meeting. I bought the URLs, went back to the meeting and changed everything afterwards. But I had not figured it out for me. I was living with this name that didn't work. Figured it out for somebody else.
But it's such a powerful phrase. You know what I mean? Because I think there's, I'm really curious on your opinion. I think there's a difference between, you know, when people say be a leader and when you can say to somebody lead, you know, just take the lead, be the leader. I like a big distinct difference between leading versus leadership. Leading to me is action oriented. I'm curious what, you know, you think, because I lead says it's an extremely powerful phrase, which is what I imagine most women or men that you work with come out of on the other end, right? With I Lead Strategies.
Yeah. And I think it's both. And I hadn't thought about it that way, but I think there's being a leader and there's leading. And being an effective leader, I think, actually requires both. I work with a number of federal clients. Regardless of how you feel about the election, this is a transition that has been not particularly generous to them. The very first thing that happened is they can't bring on board the people they were about to hire, and their salaries have been frozen.
Wow.
And so regardless of whether you think that's right or wrong, as an employee of the federal government, those are painful things to have happen. Now, they also happen every time we change parties, which is one of the things. So, and I have staff whose programs are threatened. So part of what we sat and did yesterday or Wednesday in a meeting was really like, what's normal transition? Like, for a couple of us, this is my fifth presidential transition. There's some things that always happen. The party that wins is going to do some things that the party that lost doesn't like.
Yeah,
that's what happens. How this country swings back and forth in order to steer a middle course. That always happens. Of course, you have to take down all the stuff that had the First Lady's Let's Move initiative in it because it's a new administration. So that isn't somebody being a jerk. Normal transition behavior stops. And really trying to help folks who are sitting there scared kind of sort out what's normal, what's reasonable and legal, and what part of this might be a little crazy. Because some of the stuff we're upset about is stuff that we're upset about because the programs they work in aren't at the top of the priority list for the
right.
And that's not a personal thing, and it's not an insult. It's the truth. Now, if you spent 8 years working on something for the Obama administration, taking it down and taking it apart and ignoring it and pulling out all the language is painful. It's not fun.
And, you know, I mean, it's just interesting, you know, the different opinions, right, over the election and, you know, one of this, 10,000 of another. And, you know, is Washington, D.C. for you, is it just absolutely ingrained in politics, or do you find that they have a, you know, there's other things going on? Because I think for those of us outside of Washington, D.C., all we think of is D.C. is all politics, is it?
No. So I'd give you a couple of 80% of the federal government is not in D.C. 80% is not here. And then remind me to go back to what I was saying about leading and leadership because I want to go back to it. But, you know, so 80% of the government is not in Washington, number one. Number two, there are 535 members of Congress and the Senate. There's one president. There's, you know, cabinet agencies. But the vast majority of folks who are working in government are civil servants who are patched. They have rules about the degree to which they can be involved in capital letter politics. You know, I kind of think everywhere has small p politics. It's about power and relationships to get things done. That's true everywhere. But it's not. And, you know, we all do the same stuff. We take our clothes to the cleaners. We pick up our kids from school. We go to the grocery store. We eat dinner. We go to school. So there's all the people that provide all of those services live here. The largest employer is government, but you know, the next largest employer is the Washington Post. You know, it's not everybody. And the politics part of it is for sure not everybody. You know, if you work on Capitol Hill, it's part of it. But even there, and what I was trying to do with our clients and with my team was like, what's the issue at hand? Not all the noise. What's the actual issue? And is it for? I have a project that was helping create grocery stores in areas that don't have access to healthy fresh food. And that initiative comes down because it was related to Michelle Obama's Let's Move initiative. Now, do I really think these people are going to say we don't care about grocery stores where people can't get fresh food ever again? I don't actually believe that. But for right now, we're going to take it down. And the form will change. Or maybe it will be one of many things that a different program funds. The issue doesn't go away. So, you know, it's a more complicated answer. And on the leadership piece, there are times in my life where I am the advocate and lead in that way. But right now, in this kind of turbulence, the leadership role is standing still. You know, you guys get earthquakes and your buildings are built to adapt, right, to some level of sway. And I think that's actually what's called upon me as a leader in this environment to do, is that I'm going to stand there and we're going to focus on where we're going. And we're not going to get bothered by the noise, and we're not going to take it personally. And that's kind of both doing and being.
I think that's pretty powerful. You know, and I can't believe we're almost out of time because we're, like I said, we're going to have you back. There's a lot to unpack with you, I can tell. But, you know, we're in a new year, and I know I don't know any woman that's not sitting there, okay, what do I want to accomplish this year and do this year? So I'm going to turn the tables on you, and I'm going to go, Julie, it's a new year. It's like for you with iLead Strategies and just you as a businesswoman and the powerhouse you are, it's like, what are you looking to do for the new year? What are you going to do to not await it, but create it? I just had to throw that in.
I like that. So big things on my list this year. I've had the opportunity to speak to a very large audience once. I want to do more of that. Had the chance to speak with the president to 2,500 people. People who know me know that it wasn't just the president that was a big deal and an ego boost, but getting 2,500 people to do a call.
Yeah, pretty big.
That was a big deal. So I want to do that again. And we're launching, and actually I'd love to interview you for this one. The military has a term for the flexible environment. The term they use is VUCA. It stands for volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous. And there's some research. VUCA. And so there's some research about leadership capacity to adapt to a VUCA environment that did not actually interview leaders. And in the stuff that I see around the leaders, it's still more about how volatile, complex, ambiguous, and uncertain is your environment instead of what are you doing about it? And what are you doing about it at work? And what are you doing about it for yourself? And I think we have to lead ourselves to lead others. So my next project is interviewing 20 CEOs around how they are leading their teams in an environment that is ever increasingly a VUCA environment. So that's and I think there's a whole lot of work that will come out of that. But I want to know more about how leaders are seeing it, what they're doing for themselves, and how we can help more leaders lead well in that environment. So
That's cool. I love your mission on that one. And I, oh my gosh, you know, there might be some of our listeners throughout, you know, that are wanting to get a hold of you or get in touch with you or find out more about what you do. How do you, what would you like to share how people can contact you? Do you want them to hit your website or how do you want people to contact you if they have questions for you or want to know more about you and iLead Strategies?
Well, the website is iLeadStrategies.com. When you go there, there's a little pop-up that will ask if you want to contact me, and you can just send me an email right through the site. You can also, that's probably the easiest thing to do. You can also email me. My last name is difficult for people, so my email is very, very easy. It's Julie, J-U-L-I-E, at iLeadStrategies.com.
Pretty easy, because it's Jakopik, right? Am I saying it right?
Jakopik.
Your last name?
Jack-o-lantern.
Jakopik. I was saying it wrong. Will you forgive me? Oh, my gosh.
Of course.
Jakopik.
My family can't
spell
it. It's fine.
Miss Julie, our leading lady today, I want to thank you for being one of our wonderful, wonderful leading ladies. You have a lot to share. And to our listeners, I want to say thank you for always listening in. We love your loyalty and your enthusiasm as we bring incredible stories and advice and information on how to lead more effectively in business across the bar and be a better female leader. So we are in a new year, so happy new year. I can say that for just a few more days. And Julie, thanks again for being our leading lady. To all of our listeners, we will be back again on Monday at 9 a.m. and we're also live on Fridays at 2 p.m. for Women Lead Radio. And to all of you, I always say, please go out there and support another woman and help the next one in line. Have a great weekend and thanks for listening.
Women Leading the Way is produced by Connected Women of Influence, the premier private membership organization where life-focused, business-to-business, executive and professional women connect, collaborate, and cultivate a vast network of high-level affiliations, resources, and professional relationships. For more information about Connected Women of Influence, please visit our website at connectedwomenofinfluence.com.